Okay, so we're going to learn Megillas Esther tonight. There is a tiny possibility that some of this is like a little bit of a repeat. I hope that's okay. If you heard a little bit of it, that's fine. So last Friday night, we had company sleeping in our basement, which is like not terribly uncommon. And what was uncommon was that 3 o'clock in the morning, I woke up to my alarm blaring. So I knew right away that they had opened up the window because it was cold outside. So the boilers were going nice and strong and it was hot in their room and whatever. So I went running downstairs and I met the person that was staying at my house who I hadn't met yet. And he was in pajamas with his baby, and they turned off my alarm together. But I knew that the police were going to come because they called my phone, my cell phone, Malky's phone, my sister-in-law's house phone, my parents' house phone.
And no one answered.
And nobody answered to say that everything was fine. So it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and should just know that the police clearly know that when the alarm rings at my house, it's no big deal because it happens often enough. They didn't rush to get there, but I knew that if I went into bed, I would be awoken by all that. So I'm sitting saying, oh, might as well prepare the chabura. So I read a beautiful, beautiful article by Rabbi Grossman, and I want to share that with you tonight. But at the same time, I might share also, it's possible, depending on how much time we have, an amazing shiur by Rabbi Penner. Rabbi Penner gave a shiur last year, which is posted on YU Torah. It's worth listening to all 67 minutes of it, but I might share a little bit of it. So that's really what I want to share tonight. We're going to start towards the end of Perek Bet. I need this pasuk really for later, but it's worthwhile to start with it. Ein Esther Magedet Molata. Esther didn't tell anybody where she was from, Betama, or her nation, Kasher Tziva Leha Mordechai, as Mordechai had commanded her. But Mamar Mordechai Esther Osa Kasher Ita Bamnaito. And the words of Mordechai Esther would do just as she had done when she was with him. Fine. We're told right afterwards, Vayami Mahaim, it was at that time, Mordechai Yoshev Bishar HaMelech. Mordechai was sitting in the gate of the king. That must be telling us something. Mordechai is important. The Shar HaMelech was not a place that everybody could be. You had to be someone to be there. Katzap Bigdan Vatera Shnei Sarisei HaMelech Mishomrei Asaf. So what happened? We had these two officers of the king, Bigtan and Teresh, and they got angry. And they wanted to kill Ahasuerus. Mordechai finds out what they were up to. And he tells Esther, Mordechai. And Esther tells the king in the name of Mordechai. They investigated the matter, and they found it to be correct. And they are hanged immediately. And it's written in the book of memory, the Divrei Yomim, the Chronicles of the King. That's interesting because in Perek Vav, I never realized that until now, but right, Balaila Hahu Nadadash Natamelech, where do they read from? The Sefer what? I don't have a Megillah in front of me, but I'm like 99% sure. And all the... They read from the Sefer Ha... Is that what they read from there? Or is it Sefer HaZichronot?
Sefer HaZichronot, yeah.
Can we get a Megillah?
Did you say it was Israeli
accent? Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's the Sefer HaZichronot. Maybe it's... Okay, so it's either way we agree that there's the word Zichronot. So
there's at least one pasuk where it puts them together.
Okay, so that's a question. Is it the same book? What's going on? But anyway, whatever it is, it's written.
Sefer Zichronot.
Does it say Divrei Yom or just Sefer
Zichronot?
Later. Yeah, Sefer Zichronot, Divrei Yom.
Yeah. Okay. So anyhow, what's going on here? He writes it down, meaning like, you did something really, really big for me, right? Like, what did you do? You saved my life! And we just write it down and we'll take care of that later. So there's a lot of questions you could ask.
Well, could it have been the assassination attempt that they're writing down as opposed to that he saved his life that they're writing down?
Okay, but either way, right? Like,
when you have a treasonous behavior of officers of the king who are attempting to have a coup.
No, but I think
yeah,
I know, I agree with you, but at the same time, what are you writing down? I'm writing down, this is a lesson for future generations. You try to kill the king, you get hanged.
Like, that's fine, but I'm saying, what about Mordechai? Like,
but the words that
yeah, like, Megillah specifically somebody does me a favor, right? What do they do? Like, I don't know. Like, something...
Mordechai wrote this.
But, right, so what does it say there that he read? That he told on them. That's exactly what it says, word for word.
Or maybe there's an assassination attempt, and it was war. Which may have happened every day.
Yeah, right, but again, I guess my question is,
it
like...
says his name.
I don't know, like, maybe it's just culturally where we live, right? But, like, you do something like... I don't say... like major, but something like a whatever. You watch my house for a week when I'm on vacation, mm-hmm. which means that you take my garbage back in the first day and we're done, right? Something like that. What do you do for that neighbor? You might like bake them chocolate chip cookies for Shabbos, right?
Have you ever seen the presidential libraries? They write down what they have for breakfast every day.
No, it's not the writing part that bothers me. It's the fact that like it's for Prakim before Mordechai. Oh, we owe him something. Like, what do you mean you owe him something? Like, you saved my life. Like, how would you not immediately be like, I got to give you something. Like, we're going to get any...
He wouldn't have read it at all if he didn't have insomnia.
And the story wouldn't
have... Right, which makes it even worse.
No, the story wouldn't have worked out as well.
It could be Haman made it downplayed. I mean, at that point, Haman was...
Well,
yeah, at this point,
but actually makes a good point.
Shmuel, what was that? In Perek Bet. So I don't know. I have to share with you a text I sent to someone this week.
But did he already hate Mordechai?
Because this is, if you...
But did he hate all Jews at that point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so I was in a class this week. And this is completely, completely off topic, but it just shows you where my head is, which I think will take you very nicely to the next one. And all their learning in class when I walked in, I was in like 20, 30 classes this week. It was pretty much the Megillah. Okay, so I sent this to Malki because I wasn't sure who else would appreciate this at 1:45 in the afternoon and who would appreciate it, period. Okay, so Esther has 7 maids, 1 for each day of the week to keep track of when Shabbos was, right? Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. Cool.
All right, okay, so this is my question. How about, how about holidays, right? Like, how about holidays? Why couldn't she make a chart or calendar of her own? Did they not have days of the week in Persia? Okay, that was it. I sent that text to Malki. Wow. So she doesn't even respond with words, just the emoji with her hand on her forehead. Right?
Were women allowed to write back then?
So that's my starting point. But then, why do I say this? Because today, this morning, I walked into a class and somebody said to me, they're like, so weird. Like, why isn't Haman in the first 2 prakim of the Megillah? Like, because maybe he wasn't important yet. And they're like, but what do you mean he wasn't important yet? Like, wasn't he one of the ones that said, like, to kill... Now, this is the kids. This is a 6th grade class. It was impressive. The teacher gave them Sfaria and said, go read English, Hebrew, as far as you get, and tell me what you like. Right? It was a brilliant lesson. So, kid goes, like, but I know that Vashti was killed because who said so? Right? Who was the one that, like, executed her? It's Haman, right? But the kid is reading through the text.
Are we sure that she was killed?
For one of the... Okay, whatever. She disappeared. You're right, you're right. It doesn't say... She, no, it's better. It's better than exile. She disappears. That's like so much worse. Because, like, if you're killed, okay. If you're exiled, okay. But, like, she disappears. It's like I always viewed it. It's like communist Russia. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know, but they were there last night and they're not there again today. I am not going to mess with the with Stalin. So, yeah. So the kid's like, but wait a second. like, I know that Haman is the one that did it, but it's like so weird because I read through the first two prakim and his name is not there. So the answer is, I'm not positive that Memuchan and Haman have to be the same person. I know that the Gemara says that, and I know that that's a medrash that we rely on it heavily, but I don't know if it has to be. I'm sorry if you feel uncomfortable with anything I say. Everybody else has heard me enough times that they're like roll their eyes and it's all good. Anyhow, so, but right. So there are a lot of questions on this. I think the best question I saw, actually I shouldn't say the best question, the best answer I saw, I like this, Emmanuel of Rome on Esther, found him on Sfaria. I don't know, he's so good. But yeah, so somebody asked the question, why do they get angry? Why do Big Tan and Teresh get angry? All right, so let's like get like the collective pool of stuff that we've heard over the years. Why do they get angry? Nobody? Come on.
Make stuff up, you mean? They weren't promoted, they didn't get enough money.
Okay.
Vashti, they didn't like Esther. Okay, or
Chayyus B'Shehar Melech. They didn't want a Jew in the Shehar Melech.
Right, so I saw that for the first time today. I was like, okay.
Mordechai.
Yeah, so they base it clearly, I don't think that's Emmanuel of Rome on Esther, but yeah, because it's Mordechai Yoshe B'Shehar Melech, Katzach Bigtan V'Teresh. They get angry about that.
So they want to kill the king or something?
They want to kill the king because he lets a Jew in the Shehar HaMelech. I would wonder if perhaps, and this is very, probably the coolest thing I heard the entire week on the Megillah. There is a brilliant, brilliant person in Israel. There's a lot of them. His name is Rabbi Josh Berman. He was a scholar in residence, I believe, here. A few years back, and he spoke Friday night at the Lipsky's. So maybe you heard him. So he was a madrich in Gush when Rabbi Penner was a student in Gush. So he wrote a sefer where he does the following. He takes the medrash and he tries to tie it into the period, the historical period that it was written in, and explains how the Medrash's message is reflective of the times that the Jews were living in.
You even said that about, not even Medrash, you said about Mefarshim. Like we said the
right.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Barber Nell.
So he Dafka does that by the Midrashim. And so it's actually kind of cool because why do people hate Jews? I don't know, that's a loaded question, right? But so there's a lot of reasons why we hate. Like why we control all the money, right? But weren't there all, yeah, that's, no, but that's like legit, right? Like, no joke. Like, if you're a non-Jew driving in Borough Park, like, that's not anti-Semitism. That's legit.
For the record, I did see that in the Bronx, there are no Jews there. Oh, it's all the double parking going right.
We're
not the only ones.
So we hate the Jews because they're rich and they control all the money. But if you go back in time, you'll find people that hated the Jews because they were poor and they had no money and they were a drain on society. Right? So, but which one is it? Right? We're too involved in politics. We don't care about politics. Well, which one is it? The answer is that
it's all the above.
It's everything.
Any excuse, right?
Because some of anti-Semitism is just based on the period that the Jews are in. So if you're talking about Poland and the shtetl life, so the Jews were dirt poor and that's why you hated them and they were living in the shtetl and not interested in integrating in society. But then you go to America and it's, no, they're too integrated and, you know, they control everything. I think that that's a fascinating way to look at it, and it's true. The Mefarshim also should be the same way. So is that it? Is it just the Big Tan and Teresh were anti-Semite? But because of that, they want to kill off
the story.
So I don't remember where I saw this, but one possibility is their job was to like take care of the king in the middle of the night. The king was pretty busy in the middle of the night because he was, you know, a new woman every single night. And they're like, this is crazy. Like, we didn't sign up to work this hard. It's another possibility. But listen to what Emmanuel of Rome says on Esther. Ratzal omar, katzav bigtan v'katzav gam kein teresh, v'nyana pasu kein b'yamim ahem, b'yot Mordechai yoshev b'shar kavtso bigtan v'teresh kolomar, kaso al amelech. They got angry at the point that Mordechai was sitting in the Shar HaMelech, but why they were angry at the king? Lo iskira siba, but it doesn't tell us the reason. Umitocha kasha kaso bikshol lishloach yad b'melech Achashverosh, because they were angry. For what reason? We have no idea, and that's fine, because it doesn't have to make sense. The whole story makes no sense. They get angry and they want to kill the king. So is that the reason why they want to kill the king? Also, how does Mordechai figure it out?
Well, he knew all the languages.
He knows all the languages. Yeah. All right. And nobody else spoke whatever language they spoke.
He was there.
Well, maybe they were walking by him and seeing the Jew, they started like saying something like whispering to each other and thinking no one else heard. And...
Right. They didn't have like the anti-Semitic, you know, mantra of the Jew listens to everything and hears everything and knows everything. Okay, yeah, all possibilities. The truth is, it doesn't matter how Mordechai figures it out. I don't know. Any other questions on these psukim? I have a lot of them, but I realized that I didn't open up the floor to anyone else. Yeah, how? Like, what does that mean? It came to Mordechai. But why isn't it Vayeda Mordechai? Right, Mordechai knew. Like, this is like very passive. Like, happened to, like, this is a very weighty matter, and it's done in a very, like, light way. It happened to be that they found, Mordechai found out.
It kind of looks like someone told him.
And it happened to be that they told, you know, that it became known. And it happened to be that they killed him. They killed them. Oh. We're like, I mean, this is like pretty big stuff, and we're just like, whatevs.
Well, the whole story.
It could be that other people knew also, but didn't bother to tell the king.
They okay.
Because he heard through the grapevine. But the grapevine wasn't telling the king.
Okay.
Or it was suggested before, this was a pretty regular occurrence, someone trying to kill the king, so therefore it's not viewed as this monumental event. It only becomes monumental later on.
So it's only monumental because Mordechai had found out. If anybody else had found out, it wouldn't matter. So we only need this detail. I mean, again, I don't know. I don't know how many people were trying to kill Achashverosh. Again, you know, we've asked the question in the past, you know, was Achashverosh paranoid? But then again, when people are trying to get you, then you're not paranoid. Like, you're a realist.
Well, you don't know how many people are in that book that saved the king's life.
Right, that's the point.
The only one that wasn't repaid.
Well, we don't know that either.
Right, meaning it's a lot of guesswork. Meaning it wouldn't be shocking if people didn't like Achashverosh. He probably taxed them a lot because he had to, you know, somehow finance his incredibly costly party.
Or sending his followed by all attractive young women. I mean, just
yeah, I'm saying like that beauty pageant probably was quite expensive. And it probably ticked off a lot of people. Fathers, brothers. Soldiers, clearly, Bigtan and Teresh. Yeah, okay, all possible. Why doesn't Mordechai tell the king directly? He's Bashar HaMelech.
He had that access.
Why? He's Bashar HaMelech. I mean, he's something. Why? Why can't...
She was so afraid to go to him.
She wasn't afraid here, meaning like, what does she do? But Tomer Esther, LaMelech, Bashar Mordechai. Now, what does that mean? Did she really tell him? Was it like she passed a note to the guard who passed
it to him? Yagid. He's supposed to be Tomer. Tomer is direct.
But then what happens maybe later when she's so scared?
Yeah, but okay, so listen to this. The king, there's an imminent threat against the king. Yeah, so what does she do? All right, he hasn't called me in a few days. I'm just going to wait. Well, I don't know. That might be like... And honestly, probably the worst thing that could happen for Esther would be the assassination of the king, because there'll be a new king. And what's going to happen to her? Mm-hmm. Like, will she be cleaned out when they clean house? I don't know. So all good. They're all good questions. I don't know what... First of all, I don't know the answer to almost any of these questions, which is, I think, why the Medrash has to fill in, like, wonderful, wonderful stories. Mordechai figures it out. He knew all the languages, blah, blah, blah. I don't... Like, I am. And Ozzy's not even here. And I'm still a little bit more careful, I would say. Okay, these are all things to wonder. Now, let's just... I know this is like the most unfair question because we know the story and we know how the whole entire story plays out, which is why we really need to start like inviting like to the Chabura, like adult like people that have never learned the Bible, and like we could just call on them for like this one question every once in a while. But after the conclusion of Perek Bet, what do you think? Now, we know that the next parak is going to start off by saying that Acharet V'meila Gidal HaMelech, the king is going to lift someone up and give them a new exalted position. And yes, we know that the next word is going to be Haman, right? Et Haman. But if you had never heard this story before, and you had just heard Mordechai saved the king's life, and now the king is looking for someone to lift up, what would you expect the word to say? Kidal HaMelech et Mordechai. Why does he pick Haman?
But again, you're making that assumption that this is this monumental event.
Well, I guess what I'm...
This is written here as an event because Mordechai is writing the story.
Right, but I'd like to add one piece in. We don't know... Again, you have to remember this. It's Perek Bet. It's Perek Gimel Pasuk Aleph. You don't know who Haman is yet, right? Like I think that's like a point that we miss because we're like, well, we do know who Haman is because he's Memuchan, and therefore he already is like a pot stirrer, like a big one, and he comes up with like, I was gonna say idiotic, but like to me. I go back and forth year to year. Like Ahasuerus might be an idiot, but like, what's Haman? So this year, all the learning I've done of Haman this year, there's like a sort of psychopathic way to him, right? So, but you don't know anything about him.
He did Ahasuerus' dirty work.
So that's a fair point. So now, if that's the case. Let's say Memuchan is Haman, or let's say he's not, but he does Ahasuerus' dirty work.
Exactly the direction of Ahasuerus.
Now, how do we know he does Ahasuerus' dirty work? A
couple years ago.
He just said so.
Well, yeah, okay. But he didn't say it with the Israeli accent, so it wasn't as convincing. Right? But yeah. Why? Let's assume he's not necessarily Memuchan. So how do you know he does Ahasuerus' dirty work? So the answer is you don't, because this is the very first thing he does. But why is Ahasuerus appointing someone now? Did he not have advisors already? He did. We know he had seven people, of which Memuchan was number seven. Is it possible that all of a sudden he says, wait a second, you know what we're missing in Egypt, that's what my mind is, because we're going to go there in a second. But what's missing in the king's court in Persia? We're missing a Haman. What's Haman? He's being appointed as the person to do, as Yosef said, the dirty work. Well, what's the dirty work?
Knock people off.
Right. Like anybody that's a potential threat to the king will be what? They're going to conveniently disappear. Now, knowing Haman, having seen the story, is that a perfect placement for Haman?
Great, yep.
I mean, it seems like that's a really good job for somebody with his personality. It actually is very similar in Egypt to Potiphar. What's Potiphar? The Sar HaTabachim. He is the executioner. What does he do? He does Paro's dirty work. Anybody that needs to disappear, they're afraid of him. So, why do they choose him, though? Why not Mordechai? So maybe that's exactly the point. The point is, like Yosef said, Ahasuerus is terrified of the fact that people aren't loyal to him. So what does he do? He says, I need someone that's going to make sure that people are loyal to me. Or at the very least, people don't try to hurt me. Vayinasehu, he lifts him up. So he picks Haman ben Hamdata Ha'agagi. He's Haman ben Hamdata Ha'agagi. What is an agagi? An agagite. It's a good word, right? Why do we need to know? Why? What is the? What do we care about that? So the answer is that we say that Haman is from where?
Amalek.
There's a little bit of a problem which I've said in the past, and that is that Amalek actually was wiped out. I know. Mechias Amalek didn't happen by Shmuel, but it happened later on. Like, they were done. So the fact is that there might not have been anybody left on Amalek. But right, so we equate him with Agag, the king of Amalek, to say that they're on the same page. He's lifted up and put in a higher place than all of the officers that he's with. All of the servants of the king that are in the gate of the king would bow to Haman. And that's what the king commanded. Mordechai wouldn't bow. How many people were Bashar HaMelech?
Two less.
So we know that Mordechai is in Shar HaMelech. We know there have to be other people in Bashar HaMelech, at least one or two, because they say to Mordechai, why aren't you bowing? But how we're going to see that in a minute. It says
Chal Avdei HaMelech. It has to be a lot of them.
So is it a lot? Is it a little? Where was Mordechai standing? Was Mordechai standing in the front? Was Mordechai standing in the back? Was Mordechai standing in the middle? So the servants that were in the Shar HaMelech said to Mordechai, Madua ta over mitzvat HaMelech. Why aren't you following the king's command? What does Mordechai answer? Nothing. Vahikam rami lav yom vayom velo shamalim. This happens every day. And he doesn't listen to them. Vayagidu l'haman. They tell Haman, Haman, do you notice? Mordechai is not bowing to you. Lirot hayamdu divrei Mordechai. To see, will Mordechai's words stand up? Ki yigid lahem asher hu yehudi. Because he said he was a Jew. So why didn't he bow down to Haman?
Was it only Haman that people had to bow down to?
It seems like it.
So not the king. The king would walk by, no one had to bow down.
I would assume only... that the king didn't walk by.
Or pass by, I mean...
I...
People came just to because the king.
Yeah, I think the king was in his, like, inner courtyard.
But never left, never went out.
I don't think he did a whole lot of that. Because I think he was nervous that people would kill him. So people have to bow down to Haman. So the first thing that we should wonder is, why would a king who's paranoid about a rebellion have the whole Avdei HaMelech bow down to Haman? What is that doing to Haman?
Setting up his target.
It's
making it look like he's in the target.
Making him the target for what?
For the assassination.
Oh, you meaning people would want to kill Haman?
Right.
Oh, so that's fine. I was actually going the exact opposite way that I would think. But again, you can go either way. That what he's doing is he's actually inadvertently grooming the person to assassinate him. Now, does Haman believe that he's almost the king?
Yes.
Oh, you better believe it. How do we know that?
When he gives it
no, it's not Medrash. Oh, it's very, very.
What should I do to the man who shows favor the thing? He said, dress up.
Yeah,
and put him
on. Come on, that's like Perek Vav when he has when he shows up and Achashverosh is like, whoa, what am I going to do about this guy? And he's like, oh yeah, put him in the king's claim. Even Achashverosh is like, cool it, all right? You're like a little bit over the top here, right? So this is what's going on. That's Haman, but he's creating that. What's the deal with that? But here's a good question. Did Haman not notice that Mordechai didn't bow?
Sounds that way.
Well, so I don't know.
No, it sounds the opposite. He didn't notice.
He did not.
Right.
So, yeah. Sounds like he did not notice.
It's just like you think about all the, you know, the kids' Megillas where you see Mordechai, he's the one standing in the front.
This is like even worse than quoting the Medrash.
No, I know. No, but I'm just saying, but I think it gives a very disingenuous picture of what likely occurred. There's no reason to believe that Mordechai stood front and center to make a whole statement of, I'm not bowing to you. It's very possible he went off into a corner and said, I'm not going to bow, but I don't need to. So therefore, it's not unrealistic for him not to notice that some guy standing in the corner isn't bowing down.
If we're bowing, and what was it's not?
But if you're standing in the corner, I mean...
You think they're all bowing at once?
Maybe listen, he's not.
It's not like one comes a shadow figure.
He's not a 6'6" guy.
Nobody noticed this.
Circle office.
Also, but nobody noticed that was his personality. That's he was like in the shadows because Big Stan and Sharish walked by and said the thing. They didn't notice him. If they would have noticed him, they would have been more discreet.
Because he was told to Haman.
Right.
So I'll present it in two ways, and I don't know the answer. And I don't know if anybody knows the answer, because it happened so long ago. But there's two possible ways of seeing it, right? There's three. There's the Mordechai, who's right in the front, right? Defiantly standing like this. And Haman walks by. I think it's highly unlikely that that's actually what happened. So there's two other possibilities, and I think both of them are really likely that they could be. One is that Mordechai is like all the way in the back. And he kind of hides in the corner. And it's not that he like stands there defiantly, but every time Haman walks by, he finds an excuse to not be involved in it. He turns his back, he walks away. He's just like, he makes it like, oops, I didn't see it. That's one possibility. And then Haman, meanwhile, has no idea. Because Haman looks and walks by and sees everybody that's looking at him is bowing. And okay, it's possible that there's a guy who just happens to be walking by right now, facing the other way. He doesn't know. That's one possibility. The other possibility is, again, the key piece being there, Haman has no idea what's going on. And the only reason why Haman has to deal with it is because everybody's like, hey, Haman, what's up with Mordechai? Why is Mordechai not bowing down to you? Like, chutzpah, can't be. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is that Haman does see it. Again, Mordechai could be defiant. Mordechai could be, you know, making conveniently disappearing at the last moment. It could be that Haman realizes it. And what does Haman say? I don't care. It's not worth it. I'm not going to let this bother me. And what makes Haman have to deal with it is the fact that the people are like, hey, Haman, why isn't he bound to you?
But based on the rest of the Megillah, that doesn't seem like Haman.
Just everything I have isn't worth anything.
Just his obsession over every what he sees as disrespect to him, to assume that he would ignore it? I don't know, I just don't buy how the rest of the Megillah goes.
Okay, fair. Hold on to that for a minute, because I want to read a little bit ahead. Pasuk, hey. Vayar Haman ki ein Mordechai kore mishtachavelo. Haman sees that Mordechai is not bowing down to him. Vayimalei Haman chema. Haman is incensed. Now let's take a look at Pasuk Vav. Pasuk Vav has a lot more in there than we normally do. We just run through it. But Vayivez be'enav l'shloach yad b'mordechai levado. Okay, there's like two big pieces there. Vayivez be'enav, it was baz in his eyes, l'shloach yad b'mordechai, to take his hand towards Mordechai levado, by himself. Okay, so there's like two pieces that we have to figure out. What does it mean, it was baz in his eyes? Now, this is the great part. The word vayivez only comes up in Tanakh two times. Here and by Esav, right? Vayivez Esav es ha-bechora. Esav bazed the bechora. I'm purposely not chanting it yet, but okay, fine. So what does that mean? But also, lishloach yad Mordechai levado. He doesn't want to touch Mordechai levado by himself. What does that mean? Levado. Meaning, is it that he didn't want to? Right, meaning he didn't want to be, I'm not going to be the one to take care of Mordechai. So the levado is, who's the, him?
Haman.
By himself, Haman. Or, b'Mordechai levado is talking about, yeah, I don't, you know what? I'm sick of the Jews. I am not going to only deal with Mordechai by himself. Ki higidu lo esam Mordechai. because he had heard what Mordechai's nation was. Vayivakesh Haman lashmid kol Yehudim asher b'chol malchut Achashverosh am Mordechai. And he decides that he's going to kill all the Jews in the entire kingdom of Achashverosh, and they are the nation of Mordechai.
Then Levado has to be Mordechai.
Not necessarily. It could still be. Well, if he wants to kill all the Jews, Levado, how is he going to kill all the Jews by himself? It's impossible.
Why would it say key? He
could do it. Yeah, it's giving a reason. It's justifying the clause.
Yes.
The key is there connected.
Yeah.
Key. Yeah. He couldn't do it by himself.
Why just Mordechai?
Because he now knew.
Because now I know it's all the Jews.
I don't think it's so.
Less sense the other way, because if it means that he's like, so Haman didn't want to be dirty his hands with Mordechai because they told him.
No,
they told him he's a Jew, and he wanted to kill all the Jews, and he couldn't kill all the Jews by himself because it wasn't enough.
It's vayives be'enav lishloach yad b'Mordechai levado. That's what he was baz. First, he thought I'm only going to kill Mordechai, but then he was like, no. I'm not only going to kill Mordechai; I'm killing all of them.
So I mean this is a new one. It's a new one to me because I will admit that until yesterday I felt that the only way to read it was that Levado is Mordechai. He didn't want to just kill Mordechai. But I don't think it's so simple, and I think it's also problematic because what does the word Vayifez mean? So Rashi gives us an answer. I hope so, because I have more. I have much more than 10 minutes left. So Rashi has two comments on the word vayivez by Esav. Okay, but I don't want to look at that Rashi. I want to take a look. It's not on the Makoros because I heard this piece post Makoros, but David HaMelech. David HaMelech. What is David HaMelech's crowning moment besides becoming king? Where does he like jump onto the national stage? What does he do? He kills Goliath. So I don't have a Tanakh here. I'm going to do this like I would have a hard time finding it anyway in a Tanakh. But this is what we're told. That David comes out in his armor. I'm sorry, not in his armor. He's a red-headed guy and Goliath sees him. And when Goliath sees him and he comes out, what happens? The Torah tells us that it was Baz to Goliath. That this little kid was coming with no armor to fight him. So what would you say Baz would mean?
Insulting?
It's like, yeah, it's like this is demeaning. Right? Like, really? Like, this is what I'm putting up with. I'm fighting a little kid. And yet, it then continues on to say... No, not only that, but it was because he was a redhead. So, like, what does that mean? What does it have to do with anything? So, if you say it's demeaning, it doesn't make any sense. But there's another way, and this will go back to Rashi, Vayivez Esav is a Bechorah. Rashi says two things. The first one is, like, Esav insulted the Bechorah. The Bechorah has value and he sells it for a bowl of soup. But Rashi has a different answer, which is the one that we totally miss. Rashi says that Esav hated the Bechorah. Vayivez says he hated it. He says, this is stupid. I don't need it. It's worth nothing. And the bowl of soup is worth a couple dollars. He hated it. Vayivez beinav lishloach yad b'Mordechai. He hated him.
It doesn't work so well.
But...
Or it seemed like a waste to him to kill just him when he didn't kill him off.
So which one is it? Was it that he was demeaning?
Yes.
Or was it that he hated?
Yes.
But actually... Sorry, I messed that up. It's more than that. That's the first one. It's the same thing. So the second thing is, Esav then says, totally messed that one up. All right, here we go. Now it's going to work a whole lot better. You ready? Okay, let's pretend that didn't happen. All right, The second answer of Rashi is that like this. Rashi says, yes, it's midrashic, but it's a beautiful one, and I like it, so we're going to go with it, okay? Rashi says that Esav said, you know, what happens with this Bechorah? He says, well, you need to bring the Korbanos. Okay, what happens when you bring the Korbanos? Well, when you bring the Korbanos, if you mess up this, God will kill you. What does Esav say?
I don't think so.
It's not, I don't hate it. I'm afraid of it. I don't need this because I'm terrified of it. Now go back. Now the whole thing, yeah, the Goliath piece makes a lot of sense also. He looks at this kid. If a little kid comes out to you with no armor on at all, what are you thinking? Either I'm thinking this is insane, it's an insult to me, or I'm thinking, what's a secret weapon? There's got to be something. They can't possibly send out this kid to attack me. Vaivez, it's not the word vaivez, but it's baz.
And also, if you don't stamp it down right away.
Baz is what? I'm terrified. Goliath says, what? I don't know. What's this kid's weapon? Esav says, I'm terrified of the Bechorah. What does Haman say? Vaivez be'einav lishloach yad b'mordechai. He is afraid to attack Mordechai livvado, by himself. Why? Because he knows that Mordechai is a Jew. That answer is Rabbi Yehoshua Bachrach, who wrote a book on Tanakh.
Therefore what?
He says, I can't, if I just attack Mordechai, I'm afraid. You know what I'm afraid of? I'm afraid of the Jew. So I can't do this by myself. I know that everybody doesn't agree with the reading of the pasuk. But the livvado is, I can't do this by myself, so what do I need? I need the whole country behind me. I need all the army behind me. Because the Jews, they have something on us. Because they're still here. And Haman is terrified of that. And so he's seeking something to help him out. All right, we have a lot of questions, and it's 9:35. And I don't want to have to start this over next week. So let's try to figure out how to wrap this up. What's going on? What's the purpose of all this? Why is Mordechai so stubborn? Why is Mordechai forgotten? Why is Mordechai left until the very end? So there's a lot of answers, but I want to try to suggest one answer. It's an answer that might frustrate. Other people might like it. But The first piece that we have to understand is, take a look at the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra says, Achar advar me'ela. When did this happen? Achar chamesh shanim, it's 5 years later. Haman does not get appointed right away. Time has passed. So I'll share with you two possibilities. What is the Megillah trying to tell us in this whole thing? The first one is a beautiful answer by Rabbi Yonatan Grossman. Rabbi Yonatan Grossman says that if you take a look at the bottom source on the page, it is the very, very end of Malachim Bet. Last couple psukim. Take a look at Pasuk Chafet. We have this king, Yehoyachin. I believe that's Yechanya, the one that went into Galus, but maybe I'm wrong. Yehoyachin is taken out of jail. And what happens to him? Vayidaber ito tovot, they talk nicely to him. His seat is raised up to the highest seat in Bavel. Wow, that sounds a whole lot like Haman. Rabbi Grossman says, you know what happens in Perek Bet and Perek Gimel? God says to the Jewish people, look, I took care of you. Okay, the Jews, al naharos Bavel, sham yashavnu gam bachinu, the Jew that sat on the rivers of Babylon, crying, in chains as a prisoner, with nothing. Look at it 70 years later. The Jews own the biggest houses. That's where the Jews are. And you could have gone back to Israel, and yet you choose to stay in Bavel. God says, I'm going to give you time. But after 5 years more, God says, all right, I give up. You don't want to go back. I'm going to convince you to go back.
But the 70 years weren't up.
That's a good question. What does that mean exactly? The 70-year count? There were a lot of 70-year accounts.
Like
the problem is, you know, and so you, like, you've learned Melachim Bet, so you know, like, it's really not clear where the starting point of exile is. Is it when Yechaniah leaves?
Right.
Is it when the 832 people, right, listen to Yirmiyahu, like, check, please, we're leaving? Or is it when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed? Or is it when Gedaliah is murdered? Like, when is it? It's not so clear. Could it have been earlier, the 70 years? God could have, like, latched it on to another one of the counts. But they don't want to go back. So what God says is fine. You don't want to go back? No problem. I'll give you a reason to go back. So what does he do? God says, I made Yehoyachin that high up, and you didn't care. So I'm going to make Haman the highest of all. And let's see how you deal with it there. That's a possibility, one possibility. And that's how the whole story builds off itself. Another possibility is that the Megillah tells us, Ein Esther Magedet Molada. Esther didn't tell who she was. What was the commandment that was given? The only law that we know on the books so far in Persia is what? What does a wife have to do?
Obey her husband.
Get to obey your husband. Which basically means you have to be completely loyal to your husband. And yet, here it is. The queen is not loyal to the king. It's a book about loyalty. And the question is, who really is loyal in this book? Esther appears to be loyal on the surface to Ahasuerus, but in fact is not. That's another possibility. I want to share with you one other possibility, and with this, we will wrap up. Good people, bad people in the Megillah. Let's play this game for a second. All right, I'll throw out a name, good or bad. Mordechai.
Good.
All right, it was so quiet people at the table.
Good.
All right, fine. Haman.
Bad.
Fine, okay, so we did that on purpose. Those are the obvious ones. Let's go now to somebody who also might be, like, somewhat obvious. Esther.
Good.
Yeah.
She's good, right?
Good.
How about Ahasuerus?
Bad.
Bad.
So that's a good question.
He's at the better in Hebrew. Mm.
So it's not so simple. Is he an anti-Semite? Is he not an anti-Semite? Rabbi Penner concludes the end of his very long shiur that he says, it's very likely that Ahasuerus was not an anti-Semite. He is an idiot. And he says, the history of mankind tells you that there are two kinds of anti-Semites. The Lishma anti-Semite, the one that is like so passionate, I hate the Jews, I gotta kill them. And the anti-Semite that says, I'm doing it because it's worth persecuting the Jews. Right? Paro, I have millions of slaves. Haman, I'm willing to pay 10,000 talents of silver to wipe out the Jewish people. They're not the same. But he says that in every society that has anti-Semites, generally the anti-Semite by himself is not going to win the day. What you need is an idiot that says, I can do whatever you want. Maybe Ahasuerus is that idiot. Okay, fine. What about Vashti? Is she good or bad?
We don't know enough about her.
We don't know about her.
To who?
To anyone. To the Jews. To the story.
That seemed to be okay. Cause...
So I want to share with you what most five-year-olds will tell you. Right? She made the Jewish maids, right? They had to work super hard, especially on Shabbos. She apparently didn't have a calendar either. Go figure.
They're all illiterate.
Right? Okay, yeah. So that's one. Why doesn't she come to the party of Ahasuerus?
She was stricken.
Yeah, because she was supposed to come naked, and she was okay with that.
Until she grew a tail.
Except she grew a tail. And she had a horrible case of acne.
Well, that makes sense.
Right, meaning if you have a tail and a horrible case of acne, and there are a lot of men, you should probably not parade around naked.
Really, it's not
True. Yeah.
Without that,
yeah, but the whole question is, like, what's the deal with Vashti? So, let me share with you a beautiful piece by my new favorite Meforesh, Emmanuel of Rome, on Megillas Esther. Second page, bottom source. Third line from the top, V'hasiba, end of the line. V'hasiba shemei anaham al kalalechet. Sham bidvar ha-melech. The reason she refuses to come, bavur she'ulai yada shichrut ha-melech. Maybe she knew that her husband was a raging alcoholic. V'yara vashti lalechet lefanav b'eit shichrut. And she said, I'm terrified of coming in front of my husband, who's an idiot and a drunk. Right? Maybe he is going to ask me to do something that is nivala.
Command.
Right, thank you. Command me to do something that's a dvar nivala, something that's disgusting before the sarim. She said in her heart, when he sobers up tomorrow, he'll know that the reason I didn't do this was because he was drunk, and he'll pardon me.
Well, so the segue about the women and wives obeying their husband came after this, or as a result of the pardon.
As a result of it, but he's the king, and the king says, honey, come here now, and she says, no. She's banking on the fact that he's going to be like, okay, ha ha ha, and collapse at the table. And when he wakes up in the morning, he'll be like, well, that was a close one. I almost did something really stupid to my wife. That's what she hopes. Except there's one little problem. Right? The jury comes out that moment before he sobers up. It's also possible that the way of the world back then was that women didn't go amongst the men. Well, what's the proof of that? How many parties were there? Two. One of the parties was where? By the men, and the other one was by the women. So ends off of Emmanuel of Rome. The truth is that this all had to happen. Why? Simply to have her die, because if she hadn't died, what wouldn't happen? Esther wouldn't become the queen. Well, what a different view on Vashti. Vashti is a woman of moral conviction. She stands up for her beliefs and won't do anything to compromise her moral values. Well, she won't come before the king.
She doesn't want to embarrass herself.
Who else in the Megillah feels the same way? Mordechai. Why won't Mordechai bow? Right? It says, "Eino koreis." Right? He will not bow and he will not mishtachaved haman. Why? Because he says, I have a sense of values and I refuse to do that.
Well, if she had a sense of values, maybe she would have saved the Jews.
She was dead or gone.
She was killed so that Esther can be the queen and save the Jews. If she had moral compass, and she said, "Oh, you can't kill these people."
You have moral compass.
What is her moral compass? But
was it Nebuchadnezzar's?
So maybe. So I think this is like Rabbi Yonatan, and with this we'll end. Rabbi Yonatan Grossman's point is it possible that Mordechai and Vashti are actually the most similar characters to each other in the Megillah? They both have a sense of...
Mordechai also didn't appear naked, so maybe.
They both have a sense of what they believe is right and wrong. And they refuse to bow to anyone who opposes them. And they realize in doing this that there is the possibility that... that there'll be repercussions. And yet Mordechai says, I'm willing to do this despite the fact that this might lead to my demise by Haman. And Vashti says the same thing. But why do they need that? So this is, I think, his brilliant twist on the whole thing. Is Rabbi Grossman says, it's not that they're anti-Achashverosh or anti-Haman. but they're anti the way of this kingdom. This kingdom is illogical. Because the king says, because something happens, they make all these laws. We don't know how many other laws came as like knee-jerk reactions to things. Imagine having a law on the books. You got to listen to all women have to listen to their husbands. Back then, that seems very strange. Vashti says, I refuse to accept the illogical nature of this monarchy. Mordechai says the exact same thing. And that is certainly a fascinating way to look at it. But at the end of the day, it is the illogical nature. It's the illogical nature of the Megillah and Shushan that helps save the Jewish people. Because Esther, as Emmanuel of Rome says, would never have been in her place if not for what happened. Mordechai, think about this. Mordechai would never have ended up in his place if not for the fact that we had all these questions. Why doesn't he get a reward? Why is it only written down? Because there is no rhyme or reason. But the rhyme or reason is that God is working all the pieces so that later on, in Perek Vav, all the pawns and all the pieces are in place to help save the Jews.
Go ahead.